All right, Crypt Nation fam, let's pause for 1 second and talk about an important issue going on right now, and that's SIM swap attacks. SIM swap attacks are becoming a serious threat, especially in crypto. If someone gets control of your phone number, they can access your bank accounts, your exchanges, emails, and even your private messages. That's why the Crypto 101 podcast is partnered with Afani. It's America's most secure mobile service, offering a guaranteed protection against SIM swaps with added privacy. Since launching, not one single Afani user has ever been SIM swapped. And for some reason, if it ever does happen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance against financial losses. This is literally why we chose to partner with them. It is our favorite thing about Afani is the insurance policy of up to $5 million if it does happen to you. Afani runs on either AT&T or the Verizon network, and you get to choose which one. There are no contracts, and it is super easy and seamless to sign up. You also get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's zero risk in trying it out. Right now, for our listeners, you get $99 off when you sign up at Afani.com/crypto101. That's Afani.com/crypto101, or check the show notes below for a link. These days, your phone number is probably more valuable than your social security number. So make sure it's protected with Afani.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. I'm your co-host, although today not accompanied by my notorious compadre, Mr. Brendan Veman. Got pulled into a few other directions, but man, I do have the sincere pleasure and privilege to be interviewing one-on-one here, Mr. Kyle Reedhead, who's the co-owner and head of research at Milk Road and the co-founder of Impact 3. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me, and how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to chat today.
Yeah, no, I'm actually, you know, quite a big fan of the Milk Road, you know, X feed and the newsletter and everything that you guys have been building. You know, from a guy who, you know, Crypto 101, we do lots of crypto education, crypto research. There's not many other people out there that are doing as high quality stuff as you. Really, you know, high quality, but also very digestible and very approachable. And so, yeah, for all of our listeners, definitely, you know, I'm bringing on Kyle because he's got great content. He's got a great community, and I'm excited to learn about him and learn from him. And I think everybody's going to have a great time. So Kyle, let's just dive in here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you kind of came into, you know, building Milk Road.
Yeah, sure. So I've been in the creator economy for a little over a decade, working with clients, building my own things for a while. And then back in 2018, I believe it was, I had my own like online coaching business. So I had a podcast, I had a bunch of things in the health space because I took kinesiology way back in the day.
Oh, nice.
And and I was investing on the side. I was the kind of early in like social media, investing in that side, early in like marijuana in Canada here. It became legal, like, I don't know how long ago, years and years ago. And
BC,
so it was like
button.
Kind of early in that. Yeah, exactly. So I was kind of doing two things. I was building businesses in the creator economy, learning about how media works, and then was also investing kind of in like newer industries, let's call it. And at one point I was like, you know what? I need to, if I'm going to be an investor, I need to really figure this stuff out. And I started studying like economics textbooks and like investing books and just kept reading. And in 2019, I met someone, I was living in Mexico, who worked for Exodus, which is a crypto wallet. And
they just went public, right?
They just went public. Exactly. Yeah. So he was the head of marketing there, and we became good buddies in Mexico. And he told me where he worked. And I was like, man, I've been hearing about this crypto thing from like 2017, that the notorious cycle. And I was like, but I never really got into it. Never quite figured out what it was. And so he explained to me, we sat there, we went for dinner, and he explained for like 3 hours, got me a wallet, sent me some ETH at the time. And I was like, wow, this is wild. Okay. I kind of get it, but like, you know, you never really quite understand it after just a dinner. So all of a sudden I woke up not too much later, and Facebook had banned my account. And I had like Facebook group with like 60,000 people in there. I had like my whole business was basically run on Facebook, and they just like deleted my account, and I had no idea why. And wow. Still don't know why today. It's just gone. And it's like my personal Facebook account from when I had like, you know, photos from a kid, stuff like that. So I was like, what the heck just happened? And as that happened, I had been learning about Ethereum. And I was like, The moment that happened, I was like, whoa, now I really understand what Ethereum is, what blockchain is, like what crypto is doing here in terms of like owning your own data, owning your own accounts, not having to rely on you know, big companies to do that. I understood the financial side, right? Bitcoin made sense to me. Ethereum, I was trying to wrap my head around. As soon as that happened, I was like, holy shit, I see it now. I see where this world is going. And I immediately was like, you know, I was running a marketing agency at the time, and obviously I was investing in this stuff, but I was like, I think the internet's going to really change here. And I need to figure out how that's going to impact my clients, right? All my clients have, they're content creators, they're building digital products. So like they could have the same problems that I went through. And I could really see that like Ethereum Web3 was going to fix that. Now this was back in like 2019, 2020. So it's very early days. But I started to transition my companies into this space and started to like dive into it further. And so it came out of like just issues I had in the Web2 world or the traditional world that really happened to coincide the same time as I was learning the space. And that sort of like sent me off on a journey and sent me down that rabbit hole.
Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body actually is? I found that out firsthand when I took the TrueAge test from True Diagnostic, and it completely changed the way I think about my health. With just a simple at-home test, you can find out your true biological age with no doctor visits or labs. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You mail in your sample using a prepaid package, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you will get a detailed online report about your aging and health. The test breaks down how fast 11 key systems like your heart, brain, liver, and lungs are aging, plus 75 longevity biomarkers covering things like metabolic health, immune response, and disease risk. Your biological age, how old your cells and organs really are, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, and dementia. That's why knowing it can be life-changing, and that's exactly what TrueAge helps you do. They made it so easy to get my blood drawn, show me my results, and give me the data so I could make the perfect action plan for me to better my health. If you're serious about longevity or just curious about what your body's real age is, head to truediagnostic.com and use my code Crypto101 for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code Crypto101 for 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Cold mornings, holiday plans. This is when I need my wardrobe to just work. That's why I'm all about Quince. They make it easy to look sharp, feel good, and find gifts that last. From Mongolian cashmere sweaters to Italian wool coats, Quince pieces are crafted from premium materials and built to hold up without the luxury markup. Quince makes the essentials every guy needs, Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, Italian wool coats that look and feel designer, and denim and chinos that fit just right. Their outerwear lineup is no joke, guys. You have to go check it out. Each piece is made from premium materials by trusted factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. By cutting out the middleman and traditional markup, Quince delivers the same quality as luxury brands at a fraction of the price. It's everything you actually want to wear. Built to hold up season after season. Guys, the down jacket I picked up from Quince is getting me through the cold winter when I go up north to visit my family. I also got an awesome vest that I like to wear down here in Florida when the weather gets colder as well. It looks super expensive and designer, but again, it's a fraction of the price. Guys, get your wardrobe sorted and your gift list handled this holiday season with Quince. Don't wait. Go to Quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping on your orders and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's Quince, Quince.com/crypto101. You'll get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/crypto101. You'll be glad you did.
Man, that's an incredible journey. And I love that you took a bad situation, and when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade, right? Like, you're like, oh my God, my whole business, my whole life, everything you kind of worked for, it just gets shut down because it's under some centralized control, right? And you just have, you're not just the one case of that happening. It's happened to many people, right? You know, whether it's debanking because you relied on one bank or anything. It's just, I've definitely heard of stories similar, and like you're like, oh wait, there's actually a solution to that, and it's crypto, it's decentralization. It's, you know, why does Facebook and all these banks and everybody, why do they get to be the main authority of all things relevant? And why can't we kind of decentralize that power? And so it's really cool to see that you not only bounced back from that, but kind of bounced back and now probably feel pretty vindicated, building successful businesses now in the crypto space. But now tell us about Milk Road. And kind of which came first? Was it Impact 3 and then Milk Road, or vice versa? Tell us about what you guys are all working on there.
Yeah, sure. So Impact 3 was first, which was the marketing agency. We've had that for a number of years, started it back in 2019. And back then, after this stuff sort of happened and I started learning more about crypto, I started transitioning our clients. So we used to work with those that had like online courses, et cetera. We started moving it more into the crypto space. So our first client was Bankless. I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of Bankless before. So we really helped them grow back in 2020 from about 15,000 subs to over 300,000 subs. So they grew really, really fast because we brought a lot of like, let's call it Web2 marketing tactics to crypto, which a lot of people in crypto weren't really doing. Right. So from Bankless, we really started working with a bunch of other brands, and then we moved into actual protocols. Obviously, the strategies for protocols are a lot different, but we started to really understand the space as a result of working with those who were building the space, which was pretty cool. At the same time, when it hit about, I think it was mid-2022, we realized that there was, at the time anyway, there wasn't a ton of media companies that either weren't super technical or super like finance lingo, right? Kind of, I'm sure a similar reason to why you guys started yours, Crypto 101, is like everything was like technical jargon or like financial jargon. And there's a lot of people in this world who just don't get that. Yeah. So we actually started a company called Web Theory Academy. And this was a media brand that had a podcast newsletter, whatever. We were growing quite well and that was pretty good. But we were also working with Milk Road with our agency. So I didn't start Milk Road. There was another guy, Sean Puri, who did. He now runs My First Million podcast, which a lot of people might have heard of. Mm. And anyway, he had sold Milk Road to some guys who were working with us. And they ended up buying it for the wrong reasons, didn't really want to continue it. And they asked us, hey, would you guys want to acquire this? You guys already have a media company that's very similar to Milk Road with products. We had like paid products. We had things that we were actually building, whereas they just had a newsletter. Mm-hmm. And then they knew we knew how to run newsletters because we had a marketing agency in the space. And so we were like, absolutely, we love Milk Road. Let's do this. So we acquired it over a year ago and have been building that ever since. So now we have Impact 3, which still continues to grow and work with a lot of brands and protocols in the space. And we basically transitioned our old podcast and our old products under the Milk Road brand. And now we're kind of running with Milk Road, which has been a lot of fun. We love the audience and the community there at Milk Road. We've really helped to grow that and build that into something bigger. And our main goal at Milk Road is like, we want to help people invest in this space. But more so, I would say it's even more broad. We want to help people invest, right? We want to help people understand how to invest. And retail people, they often struggle with that. And so our goal is to help people invest, help them, you know, people become financially free. And we use crypto as a good tool for that because we think it's the best tool for that. Not only in terms of making money, but also in terms of like saving, getting yield, you know, learning about financial instruments and the future of finance. It's all happening here. And so we really love the space and we want to keep kind of proliferating it forward, both through our marketing agency and through our media platform.
That sounds awesome. And yeah, like as you know, listeners that I think of Crypto 101, people are looking for that same kind of stuff, you know, how to invest, and just learning some of those first principles about, you know, what make, you know, good decisions versus bad decisions and, you know, how to compound that. And yeah, I guess kind of like from your perspective, or maybe from like the ethos of Milk Road and the researchers, that you head up, what kind of is, you know, some of those, you know, what kind of are some of those like first principles that you like to instill into the mind of your community, especially when it comes to crypto?
Yeah, for sure. In terms of investing, do you mean?
For sure.
Yeah. So we take a very long-term approach, which I think is not like a lot of this industry. You know, there's a lot of short-termism in this space. There's a lot of I want to get rich quick. And we're trying to help people understand you can try to get rich quick, but it's probably not going to work out for you, right? You're trying to buy a lottery ticket and that, you know, how often does that work? And so we try to help people understand like, look, crypto is a place where the gains are incredible. It grows faster, appreciates faster than any other industry in the world. So like it is amazing returns, but you need to do this long-term. You need to compound your results year over year. And if you can do that, that's how you really end up making the money, right? Like if you look at any of the best investors in the world, Warren Buffett, et cetera, they didn't get rich in a day. Warren Buffett's been doing this thing for like 70, 80 years, right? It took him, I think, 45 years or something to become a billionaire. And the guy's like 90 and still doing it. Like, this is what it takes to really become a good investor is compounding results year over year. So that's the first thing we try to make people understand. The second is we try to help them build conviction. So like, instead of just buying random tokens because someone told you to do it on YouTube, it's like, understand what these things actually are. What are we really building here? which projects or which protocols and things are actually have product market fit, which ones are actually doing things good for their token and not just like I have, you know, 10% of my token supply on the market and I'm just selling it every day. You know what I mean? It's like, let's really think fundamentals here. And think about what's really happening in the space, which I think it's interesting. There's just not a lot of people that do that. People are more just like, oh, I heard this token. This one's got the narrative. I'm just going to buy that and invest in it instead. So again, kind of more zoomed out long-term approach. Most of what we do with our community when we talk about kind of portfolio is like we're mainly in the majors and then we go and we play around in some of the smaller stuff. Because for me, we know crypto is going to be, you know, is a huge thing and it's going to continue to grow just like, you know, the internet did over many, many, many years. And the good companies of the internet, you could have bought them at any single time. And as long as you just kept buying them like Facebook or Amazon or Google or Apple, you could have bought them 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, 2 years ago. And either way you're up, right? Mm-hmm. Because more and more people are coming online every single day. And there's more value being created online every single day. And so the big companies, the majors in the internet world that have network effects, they're able to capitalize on that and keep growing. And that's why we have trillion-dollar companies today. And we think the same thing is true here with crypto in the on-chain economy. More and more people are coming on-chain every day. And so you can just buy things like Bitcoin, which I know aren't sexy anymore. But so long as this idea of more and more people coming on-chain every day is true, then the majors like Bitcoin or ETH or whatever, Coinbase is one of the majors I think of, those are just going to continue to grow time over time over time. You don't have to go and find these like 1000x meme coin, right? It's like instead dollar cost average and think more long term and let's try to find the big winners over the next decade or two decades. That's where you're going to really create a large sum of capital rather than jumping in and out of trade. So that's kind of we're more of a slower, more boring approach to investing. We often say like less is more in investing. But I really believe that is the best way for most people, especially retail, which are the people listening to these podcasts. They're the ones listening to TikTokers and YouTubers. The last thing they need is to be trading and jumping in and out of stuff. It's like, because it's not their full-time job, right? And so if it's not your full-time job, if you're not a pro trader, then you need to be thinking more long-term. And that's going to, the longer you stay in the game, the more you increase your chances of success. That's like the main thing I teach people.
Yeah, no, it's a great, reminder that time in the markets is better than trying to time the markets, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's very difficult to perfectly time the peaks and the valleys, but if you could just have, you know, proper risk management over the long term, you know, and compound those gains, that's where you're going to get the 100%. Best results. And, you know, as somebody who's spending all their time, you know, heading up research, what are some of the areas or maybe what kind of data do you look at if you're trying to evaluate, you know, what makes one crypto better than the other? For instance, everybody asks about, you know, Ethereum versus Solana and, you know, how do you, or, you know, Ripple versus X, Y, and Z. Like, how do you kind of parse through some of that data and what do you find most valuable?
Yeah, for us, it's looking at adoption, right? So it's looking at, and totally. When you think of blockchains, who's a blockchain's customer or who's a blockchain's user? It's not the average person. It is a builder, right? It is companies that want to build on top of there, right? So when you look at adoption, it's not how many necessarily like active addresses are on there. It's how many active developers or how many active teams or how many businesses rely on these protocols. And so we think more like network effects. Network effects to me is kind of the most important thing in any technology, especially platform-based technologies. And so as you named, which was a bunch of L1s, the way that you need to look at those is not necessarily by active addresses or, you know, number of transactions, although those are, of course, important as well. It's how many people or businesses or developers or companies or governments now rely on that platform to do business or to do whatever it is they're doing, right? And so I know there's a lot of people that have gotten bearish on Ethereum lately because, you know, the values are accruing to the L2s. But I think about it, it's like, well, all of those L2s, whether it's Base or Inc. or Sony or whatever, they rely on Ethereum. They need Ethereum to succeed for their businesses to succeed, right? Right. BlackRock building on Ethereum. They need Ethereum to succeed for their fund to succeed. And this is a network effect, right? So although not all the value is accruing to ETH right now, like, I don't think that these L1s are really valued based off fees because if they were, then they would all be extremely overvalued and none of it would make any sense, right? But they're valued as almost like digital real estate, right? Like these are, this is literally real estate for companies to build on top of. They put their smart contracts on there. They put liquidity on there. And so these things are all building on network effects. And so we look at a lot of the, it's tougher to track that stuff, right? There's not just like a some website I can go to and see a live dashboard of how many people are building on Ethereum and how much, you know, business, how many businesses are building on Ethereum, et cetera. So it's really about staying in the know to try to understand that stuff. And then of course, the more people, the more businesses, et cetera, that are building on them, you're going to have more transactions and more, you know, capital, liquidity, TVL, et cetera. So like all that comes with it. But to me, that's what I'm looking at. So when people say ETH is dead, I'm like, ah, doesn't seem like it's dead because there's so many people building there. So it's got something, right? And if you think about the way the internet worked is there were a lot of companies like Amazon, for example, that built for a long time, not profitably at all. And it was like, what is this thing's business model? And no one knew, but it didn't matter because they were just attracting more buyers and more sellers on their platform. And now today, I mean, they make billions and billions and billions of dollars, right? And so I think the same thing is true in crypto. It's like, yes, I know revenue matters or fees matter, but it's more like, let's build network effects. And as they do that, they'll start to find more ways to monetize over time, right? But it's, again, long-term here.
No, I love it. That's incredible. And I think you're the perfect guy to ask this as well, because, you know, you came into crypto from a very principled perspective, like, hey, I got, you know, deplatformed. What if we could find a platform that everybody's equal and there's no deplatforming? And, you know, and then you maybe like there's some level of, you know, distrust for centralized, you know, systems after like an experience like that. And I think everybody who's kind of come into crypto has, you know, a higher degree of distrust for institutions or the government or all this stuff. Cause we're like, put it on a blockchain and don't trust, but verify. Mm-hmm. And so, so what was really crazy to me, and like I'm still grappling with in my own mind as a crypto investor and a believer, is like, you know, 5 years ago, we would like naysay, like, you know, the institutions, like Bitcoin's not for the institutions. It's for like, you know, the person and you know, in a different world that doesn't have, you know, access to all the same banking infrastructure and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, now we obviously have the institutions that are here. BlackRock, Fidelity, plus all the other guys that have these products and funds and stuff. Do you feel any level of like, you know, are you fully on board with like the institutionalization of the asset class, or do you have some other take, I guess, is a long-winded way of asking the question?
Yeah, it's funny. You got the OG Bitcoiners who just hate this. They can't stand the idea of putting Bitcoin in an ETF wrapper or having a government buy Bitcoin, et cetera.
They think it's like heresy. It really does remind me of like these terrible church debates, right?
Right. And it's like, well, how did you guys think we were going to get to this big? Like if you want Bitcoin to go to a million, you're going to need the big capital to come on chain and to buy this stuff, right? Like, so what did you think was going to happen? For me, I think I'm fully supportive of institutions coming on chain, because what really matters here is like, look, I see a world, I don't know how soon, but let's say in a few years from now, where fintechs and banks, they are offering the services that DeFi products offer via the DeFi mullet, probably. It's like in your own bank, in your Charles Schwab account or whatever, you'll be able to take out loans and do all the things that DeFi allows you to do, but you'll do it in your beautiful, easy UX in your bank account that, you know, you're already used to, or your mom or your dad is already used to. They're not going to come and get a wallet and come on chain and like start using Aave, right? But they will probably do these things. Yeah. they will probably do these things in PayPal or in, you know, Robinhood or Charles Schwab account or whatever. They will do it in there. And people are like, well, that's bad because now we're just like back to where we started, right? Now the banks own it all again. Right. And it's like, yeah, sort of, but not really, because here's the thing. Most people were never going to come on chain and like get a wallet and start interacting with these degen DeFi products, et cetera, because most people just don't care, right? And so, but the beautiful thing about crypto and what we've built here with blockchain is you have the option to do something different. Right now in the TradFi world, you don't have the option. Your only option is to use the bank, which means they control your money and they do it all and they charge whatever they want. There's no escape route if you live in the US. You can't go and use some other product. They don't exist. It's only controlled by the banks. And even other countries outside of the US, it's even worse. But what crypto's done is saying, hey, if you don't really care that much and you don't know how to go on chain and you don't care to go on chain, use the Charles Schwab. You'll still probably get better rates, or maybe not. Maybe they won't even like pass through the better yields that DeFi gives. I don't know. But you have the option, if you want to learn, to go and get on chain and custody it yourself and interact with the protocols yourself, right? And to me, that's a huge unlock, because one, that's probably going to keep the corporations or the banks like more in check, right? Because they know that oh, people can leave if they want. So maybe I do need to pass some of this revenue, some of this yield to our customers, which today they don't need to do. And if anything ever happens, like Charles Schwab does something you don't like, just fine. Just move your assets off and go on chain and custody your own. And that's great too. I think what we're going to do here is build products for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. It's like some people want to custody their own assets. Some people, that's the last thing they want to do. And honestly, I don't want to force people like my parents, for example, to hold their own assets. They'll lose it for sure. They can't remember any password they create just to get into like any account they have online. It's the most difficult thing ever. Now I want them to put their life savings in this thing and like custody it themselves. Like, no, that just, it never made rational sense. But I think there's people in this space that they don't care about that. They care about, you know, whatever happened in their life. And they're like, we've got to go fully this way and not this way anymore. And I think we'll meet in the middle and you can choose whichever side you want. And I think that to me is the end game. And I think that's the best case scenario for everybody.
I love that. Super well said. And I definitely subscribe to like a similar mindset that, you know, the institutions are inevitable, right? Like one way or another, right? You know, if you're trying to transfer from the old world to the new world, you kind of have to bring the old world with you in a sense. Yeah. And so you know, you can't just completely ignore it. And it almost is like, I was thinking about it the other day. It's kind of like a Trojan horse, like with Bitcoin ETFs, right? Like, oh, they think, oh, we're going to bring in this Bitcoin ETF and we're going to make a bunch of money off of it and so on and so forth. But like at the end of the day, they're opening that sort of Overton window or like that the belief that like, oh, this stuff is real now. Like BlackRock and Fidelity are doing, like the boomers, my parents, right? They're like, oh, we'll just do it in our, you know, brokerage accounts now and so on. And that now is like legitimized the asset class. And that is an invaluable, you can't value that. Like it just, that changes the overall psychology and the market structure. And now we also have a president and an entire administration that is like, look, here's an industry that was very, antagonized, for lack of a better word, and censored and so on. And I'm going to like, you know, be all about freedom and choice and prosperity and And is like really boosting up this industry so much so that he's like putting out executive orders and hiring new roles for AI and crypto czar. Like, you know, this is not news to you, but for some of the listeners who are like, yeah, like I've heard, you know, the president talk a little bit positively, but it's not just a little bit. It's like he's actually trying to accumulate strategically crypto for the entire country so that, every citizen in a sense has exposure to crypto. I mean, he really does seem like he's going all in on it. And then again, that brings out another cohort of people who are very anti, you know, governments owning crypto and stuff. But I'm kind of like in the same line, like, hey, if you want to really get to mass adoption, you have to go where the masses are. And that's currently, you know, the governments control a lot. And so you, again, Trojan horse, you kind of bring in that, ooh, it's a really nice looking digital asset. It could really make us innovative. It could really boost GDP. It could really make us competitive. And like, so, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh wait, this is our own. This is like, you know, completely eating the system. But like, it's just so crazy, isn't it? Like that governments are literally now talking about buying Bitcoin. And here we've been writing newsletters for like 6 years. And like, finally they're doing it.
This is what we needed, right? We needed this to get the mainstream adoption. And I think this is, you know, obviously markets haven't done well since Trump has taken office. But I think that's more of a macro thing. I don't think that's necessarily anything to do with adoption. I think ultimately this is all really good for the space. And I mean, look at what's happened with the SEC dropping every big case against every big crypto company right now. I think what we're doing here is releasing the hounds for innovation in crypto, right? Like we've been kind of suppressed almost where we couldn't really innovate, you know, Coinbase couldn't do a lot of things that it wanted to do. A lot of the like protocols that were from the US couldn't, you know, launch tokens or couldn't launch token buybacks or couldn't add value to their tokens. Like we've been kind of stuck for a little while here. And I think we're finally, and it's kind of slowly starting because we got to get through some regulation stuff, but we're finally letting loose there. And I think it's going to unlock so much innovation over the coming years. And I'm super excited to see what that brings to the space.
SalesApe, the AI sales rep built to give small businesses the unfair advantage of closing more deals. If you generate over 50 leads a month but can't reply instantly, you lose deals. SalesApe will be your hidden superpower. Used by hundreds of real estate agents, construction companies, and service providers, and backed with $20 million from top investors, SalesApe is doubling sales for hundreds of businesses just like you. Your own AI agent instantly qualifies inbound leads, engages high-intent buyers,
and books appointments 24/7, even when your team's off the clock. More sales, less overhead. Sales on autopilot. Go to salesape.ai/podcast to try their free demo. Again, that's salesape.ai/podcast for a free demo.
Yeah, I really am. I'm particularly excited to see what kind of innovation it brings to the altcoin space, because it feels like we need some kind of catalyst, right? Like, altcoins are, you know, very speculative. They go up, they go down. Like, they're up for like 3 months a year, they're down for 9 months a year, whatever the cycle tends to be. But I think it's very much because of what you just identified, is there hasn't really been, because of this really aggressive stance from the SEC, everybody's been scared to, like, you know, build in America or even, you know, allow American users or to have any sort of value accrue to their token, which is just so silly. And so I think that there's going to be a renaissance, a DeFi renaissance, you name it, right? A renaissance across the entire altcoin market. As they actually become, you know, categorized, whether they're in some kind of, you know, sandbox approach that the SEC allows, or they register as securities, they register as, you know, some other thing. But like, the fact that we're all just going to have clarity and start to get things sorted out, that could only be like accretive and like, you know, increasing the sort of future prospects for these things. So I think at some point here within the next, I don't know, couple years, like we'll have some kind of DeFi renaissance. Are you guys focused on DeFi and you guys like spend a lot of time analyzing that, or, you know, do you guys kind of also look at other parts of the market? Like, where do you guys kind of, you know, spend a lot of time researching and discussing?
Yeah. So we focus all over. We look for where the opportunity is. I would say, like, more broadening out for a second, let's just zoom out for a sec. I think one of the big reasons why we haven't seen our huge, like, let's call it altcoin seasons, what a lot of people like to call it, is we haven't really had that full risk on part of the cycle yet. And when I say cycle, I don't mean crypto cycle, I mean business cycle. And so we believe that crypto moves in similar fashion to the way most financial assets move, which is through the business cycle and through the liquidity cycle. A lot of people think that crypto moves based off the Bitcoin halving, which I don't think is true. I think what happens is, you know, as the business cycle accelerates, meaning as economies expand, assets tend to do much better because more liquidity is put out in around the globe. This is the same as how stocks go up and down. This is the same as how real estate goes up and down. It's like basically every financial asset does this. And in the back half of a business cycle, when there's more liquidity coming out, that's when risk assets do really well. So even in the stock market, you find, like if we look at the last couple of years, the best performers right now have been the majors in the stock market, which is also true in the crypto industry. In the later part of business cycle, that's when, like, the Russell 2000, like the small cap stocks start to do much better, which again lines up the same with when altcoin season typically happens. We haven't got there yet in the cycle. We're starting to get sort of close, although we've had some hiccups over the last month or so with Trump, the administration. And so they've got to get through some sort of macro issues around their debt deficits and stuff that we've got to work through. So I think all that's still to play for, probably end of this year into the next year. In terms of when capital does make its way into crypto, we actually are very bullish on DeFi. And the reason is kind of what you were just saying, how with the SEC kind of moving back a little bit, allowing tokens to start to like buy back their own tokens or to do certain things. We think this is going to play a big narrative, but more so, DeFi is the one industry in crypto that's actually been around for multiple cycles. Yeah. Pretty much nothing else has. And it's also the only one, really the only thing that has like product market fit. Like, I know AI agents are super exciting to people, but like, there's nothing real there yet. There's hope and there's potential, but there's nothing actually real. Mm-hmm. DePIN, we're starting to get things, but it's still very, very early stage. DeFi has been around for like 5+ years. Things like Maker or Aave, these things have been around for a long time. They've established products. They're robust. They've been through these crazy ups and downs. And so institutions, they're actually very likely to use this stuff because it's not, you know, been around for 7 days. It's been audited. It's been through it all. And these things generate millions and millions of dollars in revenue. Like Maker, I think, is currently on track for about close to $200 million annualized this year, which is huge. And Aave is, you know, multiple millions a month it's earning right now. And the one thing to remember with DeFi is they don't have a lot of expenses. They're not like a normal company that has 3,000 employees and, you know, an office in New York and blah, 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 blah. Maker's goal actually for the end of this year is to have no core expenses. It's basically they're going to push it all out to the sub DAOs to manage everything. And so we might have a protocol in crypto that makes $200 million in a year and has zero expenses.
You're literally speaking my language. This is like the number one coin I've like talked about for years.
Yeah. To me, I think that's absolutely nuts. And
full disclosure, I have exposure there.
Me too. Yeah. And so, you know, I think this is going to be one really exciting for, I mean, just crypto people in general to have this company or this app that's finally making money, doesn't have a lot of expenses, is buying back its own token. But that's also going to be very exciting to institutions and TradFi. And who are the people that are coming into crypto right now? Institutions and TradFi. There's not a lot of retail that came back so far. There was a little bit when Trump won, but like we've seen it's more institutions. It's like smarter capital coming in. And I don't think they're going and punting dog with hat, right? Yes, there was some hedge funds, the crypto native ones that did that, but not much. I think they're going to come in, they're going to look for real earnings, real revenues, right? Like product market fit. And I just think DeFi is the only thing that's set up for that. And they're the only ones with enough revenues to buy back their own tokens. And I think that's going to drive a really big narrative probably at some point this year. And so I think when we get our kind of bigger moment in this bull market, I think DeFi is going to do quite well here.
I completely agree. Great call outs on all that stuff. Just because I mean, especially with a Maker, you know, having directionally bringing their expenses down to zero, even if it's not all the way down to zero, I like that direction. Yeah. And that the earnings are going to keep growing. And also one other point, it's like you said, they've been through a lot of the markets, but they've actually been through some like really like freaky times, right? Like for instance, Maker withstood like the Silicon Valley banking crisis, like through 2023. And you could actually see their governance, like, play out in the wild, like in emergency situations. Like what happens when 20% of your reserves become like irretrievable for an undefined period of time? Like how do we calm the markets down and how do we govern this like in a decentralized way? And that's the kind of shit that like you just can't white paper out. This is code in the wild with real people that are extremely adversarial that anybody in the world can use. Like how do we steer this ship? And we've talked about Maker a lot. They've just executed it, and they've done it through the Luna collapse when all the stable coins fluctuated wildly. They did it through the COVID-19 collapse when everything kind of went crazy and collateral gets cut in half in a second. Yeah. Like all that stuff, they've been able to not really accumulate bad debt and all that kind of stuff. And so it's interesting how it's all played out, and I think the DeFi is certainly primed for an awesome season here once the world kind of gets back on track and all that kind of stuff. And like you said, the debt situation kind of maybe they need to refinance at a lower rate, and so they're maybe trying to crash yields and crash the markets, but it's temporary. All this stuff is temporary. And I loved what you said, like focus on the long term. Anybody who's invested, tells you there's going to be these cycles and stuff. And the best time to be a buyer is typically when it feels the scariest. And the best time to be a buyer is when you actually don't want to buy, So, well, tell us while we still have you, I got kind of like one last question before I kind of just, wrap things up and find out, how people could learn more. But what is what's kind of one word of wisdom from a guy who's built businesses and successfully been in this market in crypto? What's just one word of wisdom to the average listener out there who's trying to navigate this space?
Yeah, good question. It goes back to what we talked about at the beginning, but like think long term. One of the things I always say is just like zoom out and chill. I often end my like newsletters with that because so many people are so focused on like, the hourly chart or the 15-minute chart on, any random token. And it's like, look, this is a very, very volatile asset class. And you're in here because you want the volatility. You want the 10X, the 100X. Yeah. It's why most people are here in crypto, which I get. I that's why I'm here too. But if you want something that's going to 10X, you've got to expect it to do 50% pullbacks or 60% pullbacks or more, right? Like that's just part of the game. And I think a lot of people, they just sort of miss that. They're like, I just want my 10X and I want it now. And it's like, listen, you got to earn those 10Xs or those 2Xs. Like, I don't even like to say 10X because like most people aren't going to get a 10X, like unless you were buying in the bear market, as you said, at the tough times. Right. But for most people, it's like, just zoom out. And if you just zoom the chart out, oftentimes, as long as you're investing in good assets, not trash assets, then things look completely fine when you zoom out. Like if you look right now, I know it feels bad. Bitcoin's 30% back. you zoom out, you put this thing on a monthly chart for, you know, for the last 15 years or whatever, and you're like, I don't even see a pullback here. You know what I mean? Like, what pullback? There's nothing there. And so for a lot of people, it's just like zoom out and just like think more long term, and this is going to come way easier to you. And the other advice I'd give for investing is 90% of investing, in my opinion, is just mental. It's psychological, right? And if you can control your sort of like your emotions during volatile times, which happen often in crypto, you will do so much better. And so I often tell people to like get a journal and like write how you feel when markets pull back and when markets do well. Because when markets do well, all of a sudden everyone's an investor, they're long term, you know, they're here for forever, they're here for the tech, and then markets pull back and everyone all of a sudden
reading my trading journal, Kyle?
Maybe, I don't know, but all of a sudden markets pull back and everyone's like, should I sell? Like, and I'm like, well, now are you a trader? Because like 2 days ago you were an investor and you were long term, and now it's like 20% pullback, you want to sell. And it's like, make up your mind here, right? And so, but that's all just fear and that's greed. And the fear and the greed just, they screw up everybody. And it's why I think humans are just actually naturally really bad at investing, because we're really bad at controlling emotions. Mm. And so whether you're an entrepreneur, again, entrepreneur, it's all about your emotions. You got to learn to just like grind through the difficult things. Investing, you got to learn to hold or buy through the difficult things. And so if you can figure out how to like manage your emotions, you'll be a better entrepreneur, you'll be a better investor, probably a better person. Like, I don't know, just like, it's the best thing you could possibly do.
Dude, a better husband, a better friend,
everything.
Better son. Yeah. All that stuff. That's incredible. Word of advice. And last thing, just, you know, I think about a lot of times, you know, there's these dips, right? And it's like, there's still all these institutions and deep pocketed family offices that have been doing their diligence for a year or 2 years since these ETFs came out. It's like, they've probably been waiting for a pullback. They're the ones probably buying, you know, patiently with their orders set, whatever, below the price right now, waiting for the market to kind of come to them. And the ones selling are like the people that bought at 100K. They're like, oh, I thought this was going to go to $1 million this year, and now it's already down, so I'm going to cut my loss. It's like, you want to be buying with those long-term people who like to buy on the dips. You don't want to be buying when prices are already going high. And it's like, everything you said just kind of like spoke to that and brought that up in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. It's tough, but that's the key to success.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, Kyle, this was awesome. And I really look forward to everybody at home kind of like listening to this and hopefully being able to go to your site to sign up for your newsletter and to get, you know, much more plugged into your community. Would you be able to let us know what your like Twitter handle are, your Substack or website or anything? And then people who are listening, if you guys just want to click into the show notes, you'll be able to find all that.
Yeah, cool. So you can follow me on Twitter. I do a lot of tweeting on there, or I guess on X, I do a lot of posting. Yeah. It's at Kyle Reedhead, so just my name. Again, you can find it in links. If you want to learn about our investing insights and follow us on Milk Road, just go to milkroad.com. And then if you're a builder in the space and you're looking for help with marketing, you can go to impact3.co, so .co. And we do a ton of stuff there to help on the growth and marketing side as well.
That's awesome. Really appreciate it. And everybody, please go check it out. You will not be disappointed. It's some incredible content. And Kyle, until next time, thanks for joining.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. It was a good time.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.